This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
The e-commerce space is buzzing. According to the Statistics Department of Malaysia, the e-commerce growth rate in Malaysia is expected to grow from about 10% in 2016 to double that 20% in 2020. Also, we have one of the highest internet penetrations in Southeast Asia at more than 85%, and mobile penetration is at nearly 140%. We have become one of the fastest growing emerging e-commerce markets in the region. And it's easy to see why. There are plenty of opportunities for anyone to get into the e-commerce space, especially with MDEC's focus to help local businesses to go digital. So today on my show, I'm speaking to Vaibhav Dabhade, the CEO and the founder of Anchanto, to talk about the e-commerce space and also how technology is your tool to tackle different market segments in the digital economy.
Hi Jeff, this is Vaibhav Dabhade, co-founder and CEO of Anchanto. We are a software technology company. We help e-commerce back-end operations management using our software. So typically, a large e-commerce sellers, brands or retailers, or even small sellers like micro SMEs, they have to do a ton of back-end operations when they sell online. So these operations could be managing your inventory, picking and packing your orders, processing cancellation of your orders, managing your promotions and pricing. So we have built the stack of our software, which is used by those businesses to manage all of those back-end operations.
All right. And the e-commerce space has been thriving in this part of the region, especially here in Malaysia. You know, MDEC has been really active in trying to grow this space. But yet, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. In terms of maturity of where Malaysia is compared to the few other countries that you work with, where are we in the global scale of the e-commerce space?
Yeah, so e-commerce is in the region, in Southeast Asia, is still at a very, very nascent stages. We have seen a lot of development. The overall e-commerce adoption is growing very fast, largely driven by mobile phone and data accesses across the region. To compare Malaysia within the region is a very different thing as compared to compare Malaysia globally. Globally, comparing like developed economies like Korea, Japan, or US, or even China, and comparing Southeast Asia and specifically Malaysia, we are very, very, very behind. Right? Within the region, Malaysia is definitely at forefront in terms of adoption, in terms of the number of people buying online. So we almost have probably more than 16 million online shoppers in Malaysia here, which is almost like half of the population, right? Which is probably like four times the size of Singapore, entire population put together, right? So it is definitely a market, a big market within Southeast Asia. Indonesia is catching up, but Indonesia is probably 4 to 5 years behind Malaysia in terms of e-commerce adoption. Maturity in terms of buying from the payment infrastructure, but also from maturity of selling online. Right? There are two sides of e-commerce. There is a people buying online, and there are businesses selling online. So if you look at put together, Malaysia is definitely at much more advanced and partly linked to the policies put by government as well. So you mentioned about MDEC. They are at the forefront of driving the digital economy and adoption there. There's a MITI, the Ministry of Trade, which is constantly pushing through different programs to encourage Malaysian brands and businesses to sell overseas as export revenue. There is a big initiative between the Malaysian government and Alibaba for the digital free trade zone. The adoption has been a mix, but there's definitely something that happened very unique to Malaysia. And that has encouraged a lot of businesses to start thinking about how they can export their products within the region. So from all this point of view, that maturity of able to export local e-commerce businesses and consumer buying, Malaysia is definitely probably the leading country within the Southeast Asian space here.
And you talked about, you know, we are also very good in terms of having a vision when it comes to the e-commerce space. But compared to nations like Korea, Japan and China, we're very far behind. What are some of the areas that we're far behind? Because, you know, we seem to have everything. We've got the infrastructure in place, the hunger between the consumers and also the sellers, the both parties that involve in the e-commerce space. But, you know, one would imagine how much more can the e-commerce space space grow? Because it seems like, you know, if I buy an item online today, I could literally buy anything online today in Malaysia and it would be delivered within 1 to 3 days. But what's happening in China, in Korea, in Japan that we are far behind?
Oh, there are multiple things. So it goes all the way right from the comfort of people, like the entire spectrum of online shoppers or buyers, to use technology. So in Malaysia, there's a certain age group that are very, very comfortable. They don't hesitate twice when it comes to buying something online or even from a brand or shop that they're seeing first time. Whereas in the markets like Korea and Japan, it has become norm. You know, you take somebody like 60-year-old or 75-year-old, they're very comfortable to do electronics transaction. Here in this part of the world, the elder generation is still a bit having that doubt. Mm. They're still worried about the returns. They're still worried about the not getting the correct products. So there's a mindset, right? So certain age, the mindset has hit. The certain age is still to hit there. The second thing is also about the infrastructure, right? So if you're talking about a delivery within 3 to 4 days versus if you're talking about delivery within China within 48 hours from one end to another end, that is at a very different scale. Look at in terms of also the modes of payments available, right? Right from the vouchers to the wallets to the different credit cards. You go to Korea, you have multiple options there. You go even like the offline payments there. Right? There's still an element of cash involved in this part of the world and specifically in Malaysia. If you look at the adoption and delivery rates and infrastructure between East and West Malaysia, there's still a bit of gap there. So infrastructure, mindset, the penetration of technology, those are some of the factors, right? Mm. If you look at the absolute number of retail transactions, offline transactions, and e-commerce transactions, we are probably talking about less than 6-7%. Whereas if you talk about the developed economy, it's probably north of 40-50%.
Wow. Yeah. All right. And this takes time and it's multiple different parties involved and different stakeholders involved in order to mature this market to that 40-50% that we're looking at.
It is. And it's also mindset, right? So we are probably that last generation that has seen no mobile and mobile. Yeah. Right? So for there are still people that when they saw landline phone connection, that was like, aha, right? Mm-hmm. And now they're seeing a mobile phone connection. The next generation that's going to come is going to be the generation who has only seen mobile. Their thinking, their thought process, like there are still people have a little bit of buying offline is a social experience. Mm. People go, they plan for it. And it's time off for grandparents to get their grandchildren, go to shopping mall, park there, have ice cream after shopping. That is changing very fast. Mm. Going to mall is no more luxury. Right? You're talking to somebody, like my son is 15-year-old. He hates to go to mall. Probably hate is a very strong word, but he doesn't like to go to mall, right? That generation, give them a 20 years more. When that 15-year-old kid is 25, 35, their behavior, their spending online and offline is going to be very different than somebody who's like 65-year-old today.
Mm. And that future generation would probably be a generation that doesn't understand physical cash as well, because...
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, this... the convenience, right? What we see as a luxury and convenience, it's taken for granted for generation. Mm. If it's not there, you know, they don't want to count cash. They don't want to count coins. You know, they want to do a transaction with Apple.
You only see it in the museums than cash.
Absolutely.
Now, and you mentioned a lot. Earlier you talked about DFTZ. You know, that was an initiative by MDEC and Alibaba. From your perspective, how has it been? Because you said the mixed reviews, but clearly this was something that was touted as it's going to change or at least bring the e-commerce space in Malaysia and make it like a hub. It's the second only after China to have a center like this. What's been going on from just your perspective and your opinion of the DFTZ and, where do you think we could grow even further and make it into that hub?
I think the first thing is that if you look at all other countries within Southeast Asia, what Malaysia figured out with this concept of DFTZ that no other country has figured that out very successfully, right? Indonesia doesn't have this, Singapore doesn't have this, Philippines and Vietnam is anyway a different case altogether. So conceiving something like this and putting that in place itself is a very, very big leap forward, right? Now, after running DFTZ for a certain time, certain level of adoption, I'm pretty sure the relevant stakeholder are looking at that data. Why the adoption is limited, what can be done to increase the adoption. What I feel based upon my knowledge and experience, and I've been involved to multiple online sellers and brands who do cross-border e-commerce. So close to 23% of Enchanto customers, they do cross-border e-commerce, right? What I feel is that the unit economics is still not workable for many businesses. The moment it hits the critical mass, where the unit economics, the cost of processing an order on average, cost of shipping an order on average, when that drops to an acceptable level, it will just bamboo shoot from there onwards.
Yeah.
Logistics is a unit economics business. It's a volume game, right? And it takes time to build that volume.
Mm-hmm.
It has started, probably some more incentives, some more initially synergies to build a scale, some more model where the e-commerce enabler in Malaysia who could probably enable large number of businesses to go cross-border with a minimal effort and consolidate that volume together is something I believe would help to trigger that critical mass and make the unit economics working for average online seller.
Mm. And a lot of people, I guess, would tend to forget e-commerce is all about being able to do cross-border sales. You know, the items that you buy online may or may not necessarily come from the same town that you actually purchased it from, because it could actually be from a different country altogether and it will take, you know, a day or so to arrive it on your desk. And cross-border, if anyone wants to go into e-commerce, have to understand you have to be able to cater to cross-border sales.
Absolutely. So the e-commerce is blurring the boundaries, right? So if you want to go on a very traditional offline retail model or trade model, you need to go offline. You have a very limited target addressable market. With e-commerce and many countries having this concept of de minimis, so you can, for example, in Singapore, an individual can buy online from anywhere in the world up to $400 per order and not pay any import duties on that, right? So which is great. So it means that if a Malaysian business can sell something up to 1,200 ringgit per order value to a Singaporean shopper buying from Singapore on a Malaysian website, is completely duty-free for import into Singapore.
Mm.
So there is a market available there. And e-commerce with the payment sorted out with already global marketplaces like AliExpress, right, or Taobao or eBay or Amazon Global, you can sell across the world. You can reach out to a target addressable market much, much beyond than your conventional local country setup. Yeah. But for that, you got to have very different thinking. You got to figure out what product, what price points, which platforms, how do I promote, how do I localize it? If you want to sell something in Malaysia locally to Malaysian consumer and you want to sell same thing to somebody, in, for example, in Korea or Middle East, for example, right? You got to localize your content. Right, you got to use certain keywords that will trigger to that buyer from Doha, right? And then they will be able to purchase that, or they have incentive to purchase that. So it is a proper business process that you need to follow. Mm. And there are many examples. There are sellers here in Malaysia who has been very successful selling globally on platforms like eBay or Amazon. It is possible, it is doable, it's a huge market, but yeah, you just have to go through that whole graduation process.
I'm speaking to Vaibhav Dabade, he's the founder and CEO of Anchanto, and we're talking about the e-commerce space, and we'll continue in just a moment. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
Bold, fearless, Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
You're continuing with me, Jeff Sandhu, and my guest for today is Vaibhav Dabade. He's the founder and CEO of Anchanto, and we're talking about the e-commerce space and how things are changing around the region and where are we in Malaysia. Vaibhav, and you know, all this is overwhelming because despite the benefits it provides, as we talked about earlier, it's still like a challenge for some. Is it because it's like a complicated space to get into?
It is. It is. If it was that simple that everybody would have gone it, for sure. It is. So few factors that comes in your picture here, right? So the first one is what I've seen with the large businesses or even like large conglomerates here in the region as well. They have a lot of organizational inertia. The most of the time, the KPIs of their business teams or management is linked to conventional revenue. So when you have no incentives to go and explore the new line of revenue, you don't take risk. You're always measured on your conventional business. So you don't want to get out of that comfort zone, right? Even if you know that the market is changing, even if you know that the consumer behavior is changing. So there is a need for businesses to really put a KPIs for the business and innovation team to take a risk and try out something new, even if that involves some level of risk of losing money initially. So that's one. The second one is know-how, right? Not a lot of businesses have that mind space or capacity to go and invest people and resources and time to get trained on what to do. So there's a lot of unknown there, right? And the third part of it is basically putting in place the capabilities to do it. So you need a capabilities in terms of managing those contents. You need a capabilities to support customers. You need a capabilities to reconcile or pricing your product in different currencies properly, right? That requires a setup. You know, I meet across a lot of businesses and business leaders, right, from SMEs to large listed companies almost every day. And a lot of businesses, they have misconception that you start selling online and you'll get sale. No, that is basically step number 001. You still have to take like 1,000 steps to be able to sell and scale that business. And a lot of people don't figure out that out. They underestimate it.
Mm. So the tech is there, but it comes down to the people at the end, again, and the knowledge that they have, the talent that they have, and just utilizing the tech. Because tech doesn't necessarily mean it's going to, you know, solve and give you the pot of gold that you've been looking for in the e-commerce space.
Absolutely. So tech is just a means to an end, right? You know, you leave a computer and the best software working for you, but if you don't execute on that, if you don't have mindset, if you don't have KPIs, if you don't have a system and processes in place to systematically grow that channel, you will never grow that.
Mm.
It's as good as, like, you know, you have the you probably have a best Ferrari with you, but if you don't know how to drive it, it's not going to drive itself, right? So there are tech platforms there. There are, in fact, a lot of incentives there. But, yeah, it boils down to the mindset, willingness, and that I would call it how resolute you are, you know, how much you're committed to the allocating resources to properly do it. Mm. That defines success.
Is there a space still for the brick and mortar retailers?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So brick and mortar retail, we talk a lot about, and there's always this debate, right? Is retail going to die? My answer to that is that not all, but some of them will die for sure. And we have seen certain examples, and that is proven by data, right? You know, we've seen Borders bookstores, they closed down. You know, Kinokuniya, the Japanese chain of bookstores, they closed down. We have seen Toys R Us going bankrupt. We have seen Sears Holding in U.S. having a lot of issues from the retail operations. Same time, we have seen very good success cases like Macy's, who converted their retail store chains as a just-in-time or near-customer fulfillment centers, right? We have seen a very good example of Amazon now buying Whole Foods, right, to create that complete and a very good mix of online and offline, right? So retail definitely has a chance, and countries like Malaysia, where there's a huge land mass, are typical. You drive at least few kilometers, more than 5 kilometers to, on an average, to go and get your groceries, your daily necessities. In those dispersed countries, there's definitely an opportunity, and there are examples that the retailer have done this successfully in many other countries. I don't think that the game is lost for retailers here in Malaysia. They still have a time to come in and crack it properly.
Mm. You know, Vaibhav, I'm not sure if you know the demographics or the location, the geographics of the area, the office that we're in Taman Tun. There's at least about 8 malls, yeah, within the vicinity of at least about 10 kilometers away from each other. There seems to be more and more of these kind of malls that are being built here. But in the US, there's a very different scenario that's happening. I think just recently in the news, you know, it came out, Amazon is buying over abandoned malls, and they're turning them into fulfillment centers for the last mile delivery. Do you see something like this would evolve? Spaces that are in neighborhood areas, in towns that have a difficulty of getting the last mile delivery, being able to, you know, deliver on the day itself, actually turning into hubs, into mini hubs. Is that the future that we're looking at?
That's definitely one significant part of the future of the mall for sure. We already start to see that many of these malls are actually becoming showrooms. So these are becoming like a location for people to go and experience product. You go to Samsung Gallery, right? You know, not necessarily, they're not talking about you buying phone. They just want you to experience that.
Yeah.
They have cool gadgets there. They have virtual reality there, and they have augmented reality there. And they serve you free coffee and water and a nice chair to sit you. They just want you to experience.
You can walk in and walk out without feeling guilty of like, you know, I spent 20 minutes there talking to an assistant and I didn't buy anything. You don't have that guilt. You can just walk out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. So we start to see that, you know, that function is that the phenomenon is what is called showrooming. Mm. People go to offline store. It is store built for making revenue, but actually people go experience it, see it, and actually eventually buy online. Mm. Right, so that is definitely happening. Mall getting as a fulfillment center just in time in vicinity, absolutely. I think that is one of the that is going to be one of the very good use case for the malls. Malls still need to sort out their distribution channels. If you see a lot of time, you know, if you observe mall very carefully in the morning and in the afternoon, the mall's parking lots are clogged because a lot of, let's say, if the mall has 50 or let's say 200 retail stores. Each retail store supplier comes there to deliver the goods. There's still a supply chain issues that needs to be sorted out on mall level. But when the mall sorts out their supply chain and logistics issues, mall can be a very good location for people to just conveniently go and pick up order or experience it and order it. You don't need to keep a lot of inventory within the showroom. You can get inventory just in time for a particular vicinity or particular region, pick, pack, and distribute from there.
Mm. And what do you do in the e-commerce space, or do you even do anything for the brick and mortar retail? Like,
we do work with a lot of offline brands here. Example, in Malaysia, one of our biggest customer is your very, very famous local retail chain called Maidin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're working very closely with Maidin to enable their online and offline. We also working with them to enable e-commerce fulfillment for Maidin as well as their multi-channel selling on different marketplaces. Same in the region, right? So we work with Nestle. We work with quite a number of brands like Bonia here in Malaysia, for example. Senhang, we talk about the Focus Point, which is another important customer for us here in the region. So we do work with a lot of retailers here. The usual mode of engagement between Enchanto and retailers is basically our technology sits on top of what they have currently and connect their offline inventory to online world. Though it be on their own mobile site or mobile application or marketplaces.
Right. And you've also got a partnership with MDEC. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so MDEC is definitely a godsend, right? So they are extremely, extremely helpful people. MDEC has multiple programs. One of the programs that to mention is EU Sahavan, which is basically MDEC is trying to promote e-entrepreneurship into micro SMEs. So we work with the MDEC EU Sahan team and their ambassador, which are basically trainers for the EU Sahan, to train them and make them aware about what is e-commerce, what is multi-channel selling, what is marketplace selling, how do you prepare it, how do you use technology to do less with more, do more with less resources you have as a first-time entrepreneur.
Mm.
Similarly, we work with MDEC with established sellers and retailers. MDEC also facilitates a lot of industry networking. So, for example, we work with companies like Postlaju, right? We work with companies like LWE, which is another Malaysian logistics company introduced to us through MDEC. And MDEC facilitates that, the connection between different players so that they can jointly offer different solutions to Malaysian businesses.
Some would argue that, you know, sometimes the government meddles too much into businesses, into too many different sectors. The government should just govern and let businesses flourish, because it seems like the e-commerce space is really driven by, you know, private sectors or the entrepreneurs who are building. What kind of role do you see government agencies like the MDECs, the METIs, the MATRATES, and also how much of hand-holding needs to be done, and will there be upon a time where, you know, these kind of regulations, is it needed, necessary rules and legislation? Are there a need for things like this?
Absolutely. E-commerce is a new trade. E-commerce is something new, right? E-commerce is where the industry, the retail industry and the consumer, we're at a transition stage from a very, very conventional offline brick-and-mortar economy to a digital economy. And this is basically essentially changing the fabric of the consumer behavior and microeconomic, right? That needs to be handhold. That cannot be left to the private players and just run the way you want to run it, right? probably we're talking about 15 years, 20 years down the line, it will be norm. And that time you do not require that level of handholding. But at this stage, what MDEC MITI is doing, I think is absolutely necessary. In fact, Malaysia is among those very few countries where the government has taken this initiative to specifically drive a digital economy. We see a lot of other countries where they have a huge potential to build a digital economy, but they are not able to structurally and systematically build that, what Malaysia is doing. So this initiative is absolutely necessary. I don't see this as meddling. I see that as more like a facilitation because it's unknown, it's new. So in that scenario, and even like Malaysian companies going overseas, right? And when they know, when the overseas partner know that this company, this initiative, this delegation is bought by the government of Malaysia, then the credibility it brings in, the credibility the trust it brings into the new partner is at a very different level than somebody like very young, small startup going from here saying, hey, I want to do cross-border e-commerce for you. Are you interested?
Yeah.
That's a very different impression. So yeah. I think this is super necessary.
And also, you know, speaking about the government, I think just recently they came out and said that, you know, Malaysia is looking to have 5G connections within the next 3 years. And as we know, you know, 5G with services like Internet of Things and smart city, smart nation, you know, driverless cars and all those kind of stuff, drones delivery and all these kind of things, it seems like it's a golden opportunity for businesses to tap into the e-commerce space now before they get left behind when 5G becomes a norm. But what are some of the things that they should be wary about when they move into the into this digital space and be prepared for what's coming, which is 5G?
Yeah, so 5G is going to change everything. It's the way we perceive internet, the way we experience it. It's not only about speed, but it's about the facilities that it will bring in, right? The accuracy, the just-in-time information, the real-time analytics that it will bring in. We will be able to measure people's intention before they actually act on something, right? So autonomous vehicles, right? Mm. So I think this is, as I told earlier, right, we are the only generation that has seen no mobile phone and mobile phone. So 5G coming is like, is like cherry on the ice, right? So that's going to change the dynamics very, very drastically. What people need to be wary about is not to be too behind, because internet and the technology is basically minimizing the barrier for entry to other players. It means that it's going to get heated up. It's going to get, we're going to see a new business model, right? We already start to see kitchen cloud business model, right? Earlier, starting a very, very sophisticated restaurant business was limited and only possible when you have a substantial investment in capital expenditure. With Kitchen Cloud's concept, you can start something really, really small, and you can scale this like crazy. Reach to the customers. Earlier, the reach to the customers, consumers, was limited only when you have a huge budget and cash pile. With internet, with marketplaces, you have massive reach. So even if you're a very, very established business, if you're complacent, you'll stay back saying that I'll figure it out at the right point of time. I think that is something that the businesses should be worried about, that don't be complacent, don't stay back. Otherwise, matter of time and it will be gone.
Vaibhav, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for hosting me. Really appreciate this.
I've been speaking to Vaibhav Dabade. He's the founder and CEO of Unchanto to talk about the e-commerce space in Malaysia. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and if you missed any parts of this show, you can download the podcast available now on the BFM website, the BFM app, or on Spotify. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9. And now it's time for your TM1 Tech Minute. It's easy to think of the world as a single market online. Retail sites automatically change prices to Ringgit Malaysia and offer easy shipping options with guaranteed delivery. But it's still worth thinking about where your goods are coming from. Shopping local online is a growing global trend. Not only does it have environmental and sustainability benefits, it also helps to support local retailers, artisans, and business creatives. Your support enables them to build strong business that can scale and compete globally. Business that can reflect your needs and values, enabling Malaysia's digital aspirations with TM1's hyper-connected ecosystem that can help micro-businesses to grow into global empires. All made possible by TM1. And that was your TM1 Tech Minute.
Tech Talk, made possible by TM1. To learn more, visit tm1.com.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.